This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Argentinian-born, Chilean-American writer Ariel Dorfman's many works often explore power dynamics in a post-colonial world. His latest novel is no exception. It's called Darwin's Ghosts, and it is his first work of fiction in 17 years. Ariel Dorfman, of course, the author of many works, including the play Death and the Maiden. He's a professor emeritus of literature at Duke University and rejoins our program. Welcome back.
It's a pleasure to be here, Frank.
It's been too long.
Yes, but I'd rather be writing than talking about writing.
All right, and you have. You've written your first novel in 17 years. Give us a summary now. This has got a lot going on in it, this novel.
Yes, well, you know, imagine what would happen if you come down to breakfast one day. I'm talking about 14-year-old protagonist, right?
Right.
And they snap a Polaroid of you. This is back in 1981. And instead of your face on the Polaroid, there's the face of somebody who's totally unrecognizable, who's taken over your life and your face. And you don't know who this person is. It seems to be a savage, some sort of a brute. And then over and over and over again for the rest of your life, your face is captured and enslaved and really absorbed by this photograph, which means that your life is ruined. You can't get a driver's license. You can't get a passport. You can't go into the streets because the government or corporations may decide to begin to, experiment with you and find out how it is that this face has been plastered onto yours. So that's the basic situation. What I wanted was to take a typical young American kid and subject him to the fabulous third world, semi-magical realist relationship and you could say the experience of what had happened to this person in the face. It's a thriller, really. It's
about a thriller, and it has to do with identities, and it certainly has to do with historical identities and
legacies. It's a love story also, as we'll find out.
Well, maybe I can get you to read for us, read a section that gives us a flavor of what's going on.
Sure. So this is when he comes down to breakfast on that 14th, when he's 14 years old, Fitzroy Foster, and it goes like this. Click. That was it. The click that divides my existence. Before the click and after the click. My father's face, gaping at the abscess of that Polaroid likeness of me as if it were the devil incarnate. It was. I was certain that it was for many a year. But he did not believe his own eyes. He muttered, no, I need another shot. This one came out sort of blurry. So he herded us, the whole family, into one frame and again, click. This time he showed the photo to my mother and the revulsion on her exquisite face as she tried to keep it from me, but I was too quick. I snatched it from her hand and there I was. Not me. In the middle of all those other commonplace conventional faces, only mine, well, not mine, stood out. Instead of what had been for 14 years, my face was another face, the face of a young stranger. The eyes of that man, his wild, overgrown mop of black hair, his snub nose and high cheekbones, his thick, aboriginal lips with barely a white hint of teeth flickering between them, his sultry, enigmatic, defiant look. The eyes, the dark eyes. My visitor. Peering out from my neck and shoulders, parked on me like a quiet, mad totem.
Ariel Dorfman reading from his new novel, Darwin's Ghost. It's going to be at Scuppernong Books in Greensboro tomorrow. And, of course, we've got all that information at our website, stateofthings.org. So Fitzroy, by the way, his birthday is September 11th.
Yes, and on purpose.
On purpose. So we're going to talk a little, well, why that? Why? Because this is obviously, we're going to talk, this image that he has that keeps showing up and the photos that should be him, is a kind of a native, and it's going to turn out to be a South American native.
Right. I don't want to tell who the person is because this is a mystery novel,
right?
Meaning that he and then afterwards his girlfriend, and then she's going to become his wife, are going to investigate the past. I mean, you have to realize how difficult it is to find out. All of a sudden you find a photo. Let's say you find a photo on the street, right? Mm. Just anybody. Mm. How do you figure out who that person is? Where did that person come from? Now, if that person's been dead for 100 years, who took the photograph? And why is this so-called savage, right, invading you? Why is he doing this? Why is he smuggling himself into your face? Is it retribution? Is it revenge? Or is there a message there that he wants the typical American kid to discover, right? And so I won't say how they do this, but they have to go through archives. And he's in the claustrophobic, his own room, let's say, and she's wandering the archives of Berlin and of Paris and all over the world looking for clues. And, of course, it's full of red herrings and full of people who might have. What did they do to this? What did they do to that man that he should so horribly destroy the life of somebody totally innocent who knows nothing?
Well, and there's a little bit of a biology in this as well, because his girlfriend Cam is a kind of geneticist. So we weave in not only this kind of mystery, it can't even be a ghost story, a haunting.
It is a ghost story, right?
But it's a haunting through this photograph. But then you sort of get into these themes of whether or not our pasts are carried in our bodies in some ways.
Yes, well,
not just our pasts, but our cultural pasts.
Maybe what I should do is read an excerpt about that, because what I mean, the basic thing is the following. She says, this girlfriend of his says to Fitzroy Foster, you know, you did nothing wrong. Mm. You're not entirely perfect. You are perfect for me. You know, it's a love story. Mm. But you can't have done something that brought this on you. It's like cancer for a baby, right? I mean, what did that baby do? Mm-hmm. What did this kid do to merit this invasion, this incursion into his life, this destruction of everything that was normal for him, right? Nothing. So it has to be something in your past. But what was done to this person in the photograph in the past, mm-hmm. that he should come specifically to you? Right. And as a geneticist, she comes up with a theory. And I'll read that part, if you don't mind.
Yes, then. Please do.
Cam, this is what Cam says to Fitzroy when they get together 7 years after the ghost starts haunting him. I don't believe that this visitor of yours threw some dice in the other world and you ended up being selected by chance. No, there has to be a subterranean link. Something in your DNA, in your family history, that was inviting such an incursion. Something transmitted to you by your forebears, embedded by them, sent on to you. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that this was to be my life's work as a scientist, to understand why this happened to you. Entrenched in our genes, she said, are visual memories from the past that surface from time to time, visions that those who came before us witnessed and have communicated down the generations, just as the color of our skin and the slant of our nose and the delicacy of the fingers and a freckle on a precise spot of the cheek have been transferred, just as we know how to swim without having learned it because of the amphibian brain still pulsating inside. Each human, she added, contains within himself, within herself, all their ancestors, a trove of what was seen and heard and smelled and touched, residues of certain experiences that drastically impressed them, pressed into them, expressed who they were. We encompass in some tangle of our DNA the silent documentation of an incessant, hidden past. We can travel back in time, Fitz. All we need is to go inside ourselves. We can't change that dead, distant past, but we can retrieve it. That's what I believe. That's why I forged a career dedicated to the proposition that some ancestral memories never die.
Ariel Dorfman reading from Darwin's Ghosts, his latest novel. He's going to be at Scuppernong Books in Greensboro tomorrow. So we can't help but think that part of the theme and some of the themes you want to explore, given the fact that this is a native, it's clear from the picture that this is some kind of Native American, native to somewhere in the Americas.
Right.
So the question of exploitation, the question of what happened to those cultures when process of colonialization has to come to mind.
What they will discover is that this young man was kidnapped along with many others.
The
young man in the photo, who they will call Henri finally. This young man was kidnapped from a certain place in Latin America and taken forcibly along with several relatives to be exhibited in human zoos. Now, human zoos are the equivalent of the mass entertainment of the second part of the 19th century, the first part of the 20th century, meaning thousands and thousands of natives from Asia, from Latin America, from Africa, from Australia, and some from the Prairie Indians from the United States were taken, enticed, and caged. In fact, some were even put in cages in the Bronx Zoo, a pygmy from the Congo, Watabenga. So these thousands of victims from the past, from Thailand, from Tierra del Fuego, from the Amazon, from all over the world, are paraded around Europe and the United States. And not only that, they are photographed by the most famous photographers of the age, put on postcards, sold as postcards. Hundreds of thousands, millions of people pay to see these people who are the missing links. and who are dehumanized. Now, this is the same thing as the dioramas, the same people who did that, the dioramas and natural history museums. It is a story of colonialism, which is basically the story of, oh, we now own the world, the West owns the world, now let's find out what the world is like. As everybody can't go into that world, they can go through photography, let's say, but they can also go because we're going to bring the natives here for you to see them, just like we bring the chimpanzees, or we bring the giraffes, or we bring the elephants. And if they die, and if there are experiments, and there were medical experiments on this particular boy who was kidnapped, I know the story is a real story. I mean, of course, I made up all the rest of it.
But these things were actually happening.
This photograph exists. I have it right next to me when I wrote it. There's a photograph that just called attention to itself. And I said, this young man, well, what would happen if one day I woke up when I was 14 years old and somebody's face was plastered onto mine and I couldn't get rid of it? What is he trying to say? What does he want? What does he want from us? And the idea of the DNA, by the way, is not so far-fetched, because it turns out that psychologists at UNC, in fact, Chapel Hill, have studied how the DNA of people who have been through extreme trauma, both those who have terrible things done to them, and those who have perpetrated atrocities on other people, are transmitted to the following generations.
These are epigenetic.
The Holocaust victims, down to the third, fourth generation. Right. So therefore, it's not far-fetched to think that perhaps that image was inside him somehow. It came out like that. Why this boy? Why this young American kid? That's what the mystery has to solve.
And that's what I want to ask you about, a little bit about this theme. How are we to take this? Is this because are we supposed to say that there is some personal responsibility here that we have? Is it the cultural, social responsibility as the heirs to all of this, as those who have been privileged by all of these horrors of the past? We bear some responsibility, or do we have to trace the lineage to our family who personally perpetrated these?
Well, this, of course, is an allegorical, it's a fantasy. It's a ghost story. So I took one, but he's not the only person who's in this situation, right? Yeah. They will find out that there's a photographer in his past on one side of the family, and that there's a kidnapper in the past on his side of the family. But he represents American innocence and world innocence, the innocence of the young who don't know about these things. I'm not saying that he deserves this to happen to him. And in fact, as we're going to find out, his journey is from hatred of this foreigner, this stranger, this visitor, to an understanding of his life. I'm saying the following. If we do not understand the atrocities of the past, we will never be able to understand how to deal with the effects of those atrocities on today. Very specifically, if we don't deal with the internment of Japanese Americans during the Second World War, we are going to repeat those mistakes with Muslim Americans today. If we don't understand what lynchings did to the psyche of black and white America, we are not going to get rid of the racism that has given us a racist president, right? And given us a country that has voted for him in spite of that racism. If we don't understand the way in which women have been exploited, had been used, had been abused, had been taken to mental institutions because they were hysterical, right? Mm. If we don't understand that, we are not going to understand where the Me Too movement comes from and how we can get rid of it. Because what I'm saying is, it's that the past determines us constantly. So the understanding that history is not bunk, as Henry Ford said, but in fact, history is essential to us to understand that. It's not to say I am responsible for that, but I take responsibility for what was done to everybody in the world. When somebody has been abused and hurt and violated in the past, that is my responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen in the future.
Well, how does that manifest itself, though? I mean, I can see that almost in the Confederate Monument arguments, in the sense that also in, affirmative action. Well, I didn't do that, and so why am I the one who's having to pay the price forward for all of the atrocities and the injustice that was done to a race of people? Is that sort of what you're saying, is that if we don't reckon with this and
take
some personal responsibility?
Well, you have to reckon with it because you're not paying the cost. You shouldn't pay the cost, but it turns out that you have been paid a price for this. Meaning, the prosperity that certain people have now has been built on the backs and the sweat and the massacres of people there. Right. So, I mean, the whole world is the problem about the past is we have to understand how it is a harbinger of the future. how it repeats itself over and over again. You know, I just wrote an op-ed in the New York Times about torture and about Gina Haspel, who's the nominee, who's probably going to be confirmed. And the problem is not Gina Haspel. She's just a cog in a wheel in a system, right? It's simply that if we do not understand that torture is never justified, therefore, if we don't reckon with this, if America does not reckon with this, if it does not understand what was done in our name, and that there's an accounting to be had, then believe me, when there's going to be another sort of 9/11, there's going to be a repetition of the torture all over again.
The problem with the innocence that you describe is there could be a repetition, and as long as I'm in the privileged class, I still never feel it. So why are you asking me to feel the pain of all the things that my ancestors have created when, if I just ignore it, I'll go on riding the surf and never know what it means to torture a Muslim and to torture somebody who's not me?
Because at some point, there will be a retribution from history. Because, you know, you do not go on colonial adventures. You do not exploit people. You do not hurt others without this coming back. I think one of the interesting things about the Me Too movement and in general is that this has been going on forever. And then all of a sudden it becomes, oh, it's terrible. That's like slavery went on forever. Oh, it's terrible. So at some point we have to say those terrible things that happened, those terrors in the past. Now, how do we deal with them? How do we deal so they don't repeat themselves, so we become a more perfect humanity? And it's possible. Now, I sincerely believe that books and novels have to do with this. I mean, I write my novels not to preach to people at all, okay? I just take a situation, which is a fabulous situation, and say, how can I make people understand? How can I make them live through it? Live through it as a typical American would, right? So I bring the third world, I bring the past, I bring the atrocities into somebody's life, and I put it on somebody's face and say, you know what? You can't escape this. You may escape it in reality, but in fiction, in art, art is dedicated to opening up these abysses in the world.
Ariel Dorfman, a writer whose latest novel is Darwin's Ghost, the author of many others, including the play The Death and the Maiden. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much. Remember, it's a love story.
And a love story and a mystery and a ghost story. He's going to be at Scuppernong Books in Greensboro on May 11th, SOT at WNC.org. If you've got a movie about a mom that you want to feature on Movies on the Radio, North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.